Mate.
8 o'clock last week?
Yeah. 8 a.m. we went to bed.
And separately. We started early last week.
Yeah. Yeah, we did. Yeah, fuck, we did 12 me. Hours last week. Yeah, maybe longer.
Getting in training for Spain. That was an early start.
Yeah, but I think daylight saving time is going to help us.
Is it?
Yeah, because we'll go, oh, right, it's light now.
It doesn't get light till later.
Oh, fuck. Of course it doesn't.
Oh, well, 9 o'clock it is then. Fucking hell. Hello! And welcome to episode 84 of Darren and Matt's 80s Adventure.
My name is Matt.
And my name is Darren.
And this week we are taking a look at
Big Trouble in Little China. This podcast is going to be quite interesting, I think. I don't think we've quite done a film like this.
No, we haven't. It's very out there, isn't it?
Yeah. Maybe Flash Gordon-ish.
Yeah, look. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yes, so here we are. Going back to 1986. Good week?
Yeah, not bad, my friend. Yourself?
Oh, I'm fucking knackered, if I'm honest.
It's been a lot of work, actually, I think, for both of us.
Yeah, and it's only going to get busier. Well, I've just had a gig this afternoon,
mm-hmm.
Dan and Luke, as you know, and that went fucking brilliantly well. Last night's gig, not so well. A bunch of ignorant fuckers, but I better not say where I was.
Yes, where were you and what was the date of the gig?
I'm not going to say because they booked me for another 3 times this year.
Oh.
And I really don't want to go back. But hey, work is work.
Yeah, we're all not a fan of painting. No, I'm joking. I don't know.
Luckily, it wasn't.
It wasn't, right. Okay, good.
Yeah. But yeah, apart from that, today's gig was fucking brilliant, but I'm absolutely shattered.
All right.
A little bit of housekeeping before we carry on, I think. Just to let listeners know, we've had a few issues with equipment lately, haven't we?
Yeah, we're getting older and, you know, sometimes you wake up in the middle of the night.
One of us is about to get much older.
Yeah.
Well, not much older, but a year older,
yeah.
But no, if you've noticed any difference in the quality of the podcast over the last couple of episodes, basically the mixing desk that we used that plugged directly into the computer decided to give up the ghost halfway through recording. So that fucked us up a bit. So I'm using a different desk to record us, which is giving it a really different sound to what we're used to, what we've settled into. It's a way of being repaired, but apparently it's going to take up to fucking 60 days to repair. Thanks,
90,
guys.
Wasn't it?
No, 60.
60.
Or was it 90?
I thought you said 90.
Oh, I can't remember. I'm so tired. But yes, and then the trackpad on my Mac has decided that it's a haptic one. And that's decided to stop working a few weeks ago. But it was still working as such, but just not the haptic feedback. And I watched some videos on YouTube.
Oh, God.
That said, if you heat it up with a hairdryer, sometimes it will start working again. So I decided to give that a whirl yesterday. And I think I might have been a little too enthusiastic. And I've melted the buttons on the keypad. So, fucking hell, do you know what I mean? It's a bit of a godsend, really, that we're coming to the end of Series 2.
Yeah.
Which might be a bit of a bad news for some people, but...
We then have big, big plans.
Yes.
Huge plans. So then we
massive.
Take it from...
Huge.
Yeah, absolutely massive. So we take it from 85 up to 100, and then we are changing everything.
Yes. Yes, we are. So stick with us. Obviously, we've got 2 episodes to go yet before we have our break. Sorry, I just feel like I've waffled like
that's
fuck.
All right. Well, how about we go back to 1986?
That's probably wise.
All right, so Big Trouble. It opened in July. So let's have a look at the chart, shall we?
Yeah.
Okay, in the US of A, number 5, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Legal Eagles.
That rings a bell. I've got a feeling I can remember the poster. Have aeroplane? Oh, I don't know. Okay.
Iron Eagle, maybe, are you thinking of?
Oh, maybe, yes, yeah. maybe not then.
Number 4 was Top Gun, and we've covered that on this podcast.
Have
so
we? I don't remember that one.
Oh, I love Top Gun so much.
That was number 4?
That was at number 4, yeah. Okay. It might have been open for a while, though.
Good point.
Number 3, Back to School.
Back to School?
Mm-hmm.
Do I know that? I don't think I do.
No.
Okay.
I would have gone more into depth, but we're recording a cover tonight. So, number 2, Ruthless People.
Again?
I think that's Danny DeVito, if my memory serves.
Okay, I'll have to take your word for that.
And at number one, the classic that is Karate Kid 2.
No.
No? No, right, okay.
Is there a Karate Kid 1?
Wow. Okay, over in the UK, over in the UK, I've only got four.
Mm-hmm.
Number four was Jewel of the Nile.
Yeah.
Okay. Number three, Money Pit.
Oh, yeah, we talked about it. Is that Tom Hanks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like that.
Colonel Tom Hanks.
I've never, ever, ever heard of this film at number two. The Last Unicorn.
And we have talked about that before, I think.
Alcohol. Yeah, I mean, alcohol gets us, doesn't
fair
it?
Fair enough. Yeah, fuck
and
it.
At number one, Biggles.
I think we've talked about that one before as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So some of the other things that happened in 1986.
Uh-huh.
Cary Grant, bless him, he passed away. But 82 years old.
Well, don't say it like that, because my dad's 82.
Yeah, I know, but when I looked at his date of birth, I was like, wow. So yeah, 1904.
Wow.
That's what I think he
was. Bastard. That's all right, that's what I call my dad, so it's fine.
Now, Eric Thomas...
Right.
You would not know the name, because I had me. He developed Listserv. You ever heard of Listserv?
No.
Listserv. So, and it's the first email list management software.
Ew.
There we go. Can you tell
what
I'm
does that mean?
I don't know. Can you tell I'm scraping the barrel?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes,
also, the Soviet Union and the US, they both launched stuff into space. So we had the Mir space station.
You okay?
And the polar bear satellite from America.
I don't remember the polar bear. I remember Star Wars, Ronald Reagan and all that, giving all, we're fucking have you and you fucking... just like that.
And on our televisions, we got Blackadder 2.
Nice, nice.
Yes, I mean...
Good, that's good stuff.
My favourite is the fourth, I think.
How can it not be?
It's amazing.
But two is fucking awesome as well.
We also got Lovejoy.
And he's still... It's still working now, isn't he?
He's Hollywood royalty
he
now.
He is, isn't he?
Ian McShane, so he did Deadwood.
Mm-hmm.
He's been in all the John Wick films, so he's right. Just in the newest John Wick film as well. Yeah. He
also
legend.
Was the first Daryl in the stage show of Witches of Eastwick.
Oh, my
he's
God.
He's got one of those voices, isn't he?
He has got...
40 Marlboro Reds a day.
Yes, yes, he's got one of those like really gravelly, Ian McShane. But we first knew him as Lovejoy.
Yes,
here.
Yes, we did.
And we also got L.A. Law.
Yeah, I vaguely remember it. I don't think I ever watched it, but I do remember.
But I remember the title sequence. I think,
was that just like the New York skyline?
Was L.A. Law the one that was? I mean, I could be getting wrong there.
Da, 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 da. Yeah. Well, we were talking 40 years ago. Hell.
So there we are. Those are some of my facts from 1986.
Nice. Yeah, I like those.
Right, well, how about we have a little look at the charts?
Okay. Big Trouble in Little China was released on the 2nd of July 1986 in the USA. So this week we are looking at the UK top 10 for the week commencing the 29th of June 1986. At number 10 this week, dropping four places, is Doctor and the Medics and Spirit in the Sky. Climbing six places to this week's number 9, it's Bananarama and Venus. It's a non-mover at number 8 this week for Bucks Fizz, New Beginning, Mambasera. And falling one place to number 7, it's Aha, Hunting High and Low. Dropping out of the top 5 to number 6 is Amazulu and Too Good to Be Forgotten. And falling three places from last week's 2 to this week's 5, it's New Shoes and I Can't Wait. It's a rise of three places this week to number 4 for Owen Paul and My Favourite Waste of Time. And it's a non-mover at number 3 for the House Martins and Happy Hour. Climbing 11 places to this week's number 2, it's Madonna and Papa Don't Preach. Which means it's a non-mover at number 1 for Wham and The Edge of Heaven. And that was the UK Top 10 for the week commencing the 29th of June, 1986.
Yeah, good chart.
Everyone a classic. Every fucking one a classic.
As you started a countdown, I was like, seen them.
Yeah.
Seen them.
Yes.
Seen them.
Yeah.
The first three we'd seen.
Uh-huh. Well, not uh-huh yet.
No, but the first three, wasn't it? 10, 9, and 8?
Yeah. Doctor of the Medics, Bananarama, yeah. Bucks Fizz.
Bucks Fizz was a brilliant kid.
I've seen Madonna years and years ago when she could still sing.
We saw Bucks Fizz at a Blue Rinsers show in Blackpool. Oh.
I think we've seen them a few times. I remember seeing them in Ritzy.
Back in
the early 90s. Maybe. Anybody that doesn't know, Ritzy was a rite of passage nightclub in Plymouth. You sort of went there when you were 14, 15 to either get pissed or get fingered, well, basically.
Did you?
Yeah. A little from column A, a little from column B.
The first time I ever got ID'd there, I was 18 and I didn't have my ID with me.
Oh, good old Ritzy. Oh, as we said, that was pretty much everyone of a certain age in Plymouth. That was their first night out. Good days. And I remember we used to go there on a Wednesday night karaoke? Thursday night.
Yeah.
Pints of Hofmeister 50p.
And Malibu and
pineapple. Who says we weren't fucking sophisticated?
Well, you need all that, don't you, Dale?
He don't know, does he? He don't know. So that's the top 10. And just outside the top 10, Can't Get By Without You from Real Thing at number 11. Friends Will Be Friends at 14 for Queen. Holding Back the Years at 15, Simply Red.
That breaks my heart, that song.
Only because of Only Fools and Horses.
Yeah.
He don't know, does he? Addicted to Love at 16 for Robert Palmer.
It's Cocktail for me. Every time I hear that song, it's Cocktail.
Yeah. It's Horrible Being in Love When You're 8½ for Claire and Friends. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Yeah. I think they'll be school
I don't
kids.
Know why I react to that. Yes.
Oh, 22. An absolute fucking classic. Sledgehammer, Peter Gabriel.
Beautiful song.
Yeah.
I would have put that later. I'd have put that 88, 89.
Really? 89? Yeah.
It's because it's got such a sound. And also the video to it is really...
fucking superb.
Yeah.
Yeah. The video was groundbreaking, really, wasn't it? Simple as that. 24, Vienna Calling from Falco. 28, Call of the World, Midure. Opportunities, Let's Make Lots of Money at 30 for the Pet Shop Boys. A great song, Invisible Touch from Genesis at 31.
Is that in Ritzy?
Over the bar. 32, On My Own for Patti LaBelle and Michael McDonald. The Promise You Made for Cock Robin at 39.
From who?
Behave Yourself.
Right, okay.
We just call him Robin now. And at 40, Roses from Haywood. That's one hell of a chart.
Great time to be alive. I was eight.
I was 11, going on 12. Yeah. Fantastic.
Really good chart. Really good chart. I like reminiscing about going to Blackpool as well with the Blue Rinsers.
But that's where Cheersy came from, isn't it?
That is where Cheersy actually originated, from Blackpool.
Going to see the Grumpy Bees, as Chrissy called them. The Grumbleweeds. Yeah. Yeah.
And Darren was on the phone. And...
which is very rare.
Yeah.
After working in the box office for a few years at the theatre, I think now the idea of talking on the phone just fills me with fucking dread.
And he rang up to get some tickets.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of saying cheers, whatever else, he said cheersy. And there was a beat. There was a moment, folks.
A moment when I was hoping nobody fucking noticed.
Yeah.
But who noticed?
I might have noticed.
Yeah, you might have.
Did you just say cheersy?
Yeah.
Yep.
And then we laughed for about an hour.
And I think we've used cheersy ever since. So that is now...
That's where it came from.
No, yeah, but how long?
Oh, crikey. It was...
15, 20 years?
It's got to be 15 years, isn't it?
All right, then.
Wowzers. Yeah. But anyway. Until we're getting older, we are just sitting here reminiscing. The listener is sat there going, fucking hell, get on, boys.
Yeah, can you just talk about the fucking film? We don't care when Cheersy got invented.
Yeah, fucking bunch of cunts.
Okay.
First C-bomb. Hey!
Brilliant. Okay, and then we've had the charts. We've talked a lot about our past. So let's see if we can have Darren's challenge. Every single week, Darren has a challenge to link last week's film to this week's film in a certain amount of steps. It's called the 5-step challenge, but Darren has this week 3 steps to get from last week's film, which was...
An American Werewolf in London.
To this week's film, which is...
Big Trouble in Little China.
Ooh, well, can it be done?
Let's find out. Okay, as we know, Jenny Agutter was one of the stars of An American Werewolf in London, so that is where we're going to start this week. Step one. Jenny Agutter was in Secret Places with Cassie Stewart. Step two. Cassie Stewart was in Amadeus with Tom Hulce. And step three. Tom Hulce was in The Heidi Chronicles with Kim Cattrall, who is in Big Trouble in Little China. And that's the three-step challenge.
Hey, well done, my friend.
Thank you
well
very done. Much, my friend.
And you used Amadeus.
Yes.
I've never seen it.
What?
But I've seen a bit of it on television, I think when I was a lot younger.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is fascinating, because I love F. Murray Abraham. I think he is a phenomenal actor.
It's one hell of a cast as well.
And I think I'd love the film.
Mm.
So we need to put that on the list.
It's not a short film, so you get plenty of time for the old rundown. But it's, oh my God, I haven't seen it for a long time. But it's one of my favourites, or was one of my favourites.
Let's definitely do that soon.
Simon Callow, Jeffrey Jones. F. Murray, brilliant. Absolutely fucking
brilliant.
I saw
him in something recently.
Kenny Baker.
Oh, bless Kenny Baker, yeah.
Superb.
Great. Well, let's put that on the list.
Yeah. Okie cokie then. What, for series three?
I was watching F. Murray Abraham two nights ago in something. He's still working, still great. In fact, I saw him live at the Theatre Royal Plymouth.
Did you?
Yeah, he was doing Tolstoy there.
How did Tolstoy feel about that?
Well,
like a glove.
Such a long episode.
Uh-oh. So,
no, he was playing Leo Tolstoy. It wasn't the greatest play, but I wanted to go and see F. Murray Abraham because I've always really liked him.
Well, Amadeus started off as a stage play as well.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he's so good. So good. I think I was the only one enjoying it. We went as a college trip, and my friend Phil was sat next to me with his headphones on. Listening to his Walkman. That's how long ago it was.
Wow. Yeah. Nice.
Okay.
Yes. Anyway, yes. So that this week is the three-step challenge. So at this point, we give our initial reactions to the film. And obviously, this week, it's episode 84. So it's an even numbered episode. I get to go first. I don't think I've ever felt this way about a film that we've done so far.
You look just, like you've had sex with someone, but you're not sure how you feel about it.
Or if she was alive.
Whoa.
That's how I feel.
It's like you've gone to Ritzy and got fingered and got a Malibu and pineapple.
At the same time, by the barmaid. Can you say barmaid anymore? Probably not. The bar person.
Mm-hmm.
I think you summed it up perfectly earlier when you said, what the fuck were they smoking? I know I'd definitely seen it before.
Yeah.
I definitely saw it maybe around about the time it first came out on video. But I remember nothing about it. Not a single fucking thing. Not a Scooby-Doo. And do you know what? It's fucked up. So, but anyway, we'll get into that. Initial reaction, I think, is I'm just a bit confused about what it wants to be. I was really confused about who to trust as well. Looking further into it, with all the studio fucking about and sticking their oar in and stuff like that and making changes.
That doesn't sound like studios.
I know. It becomes something different partway through the film to what you're expecting.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's what confused me a bit, left me a bit, eh? So initial reaction, it's okay.
All right.
To your point. Yourself?
Likewise, I had not seen it in a long time. And if I did watch it, I was a lot younger. I've not watched it since coming of age, if you like.
Right.
Since being an adult. And when I started it, I mean, I wrote a little note when I started it. And it was, I wrote a little note to myself, which said, I don't remember a thing about this.
Mm.
And then the next note was, as soon as that 80s music kicked in, I thought, I'm going to love this.
Yeah.
And then I went on a bit of a roller coaster for the entire thing. I was like, what the fuck?
Mm.
And I was like, okay, so all right, they went there and they went there. Mm-hmm. They went there. And my initial reaction is I think I enjoyed it.
Right.
But it's not a great example of cinema, but it's a good fun ride.
Yeah.
So I did enjoy it.
Okay.
Funny enough, and but there was halfway through, I thought, I'm not going to be enjoying this.
Mm.
Come the end, I was like, do you know what? Yeah. It's one of the campiest things I've seen in a long time. It's so...
That is definitely fucking true.
It is so campy, but yeah, there's some really good choreography. Mm. There's a really... I almost laughed out loud about the amount of times these guys were jumping in the air and trying to sword fight each other. I was like, just stand and do it. But no, yeah. They were jumping. There's some good comedy moments in there. I don't know. It was just so weird, but... I still had a smile on my face. So that's my initial reaction.
Nice. Well, okay then. That's our initial reactions. Let's have a quick break and we'll come back and we'll cause some fucking trouble in Little China, shall we?
And we're back. Part two of Darren and Matt's 80s adventure, where we are looking at Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah, Little China, man. Big Trouble there, I tell you. Not Little China Man, I can't say that. I didn't mean it like that.
No, you didn't.
Fucking hell. Anyway, yes, this will fuck. Scrap that. Yes, so you know what I meant, listener. At this point in the podcast, Matt has a challenge to give us the synopsis of the film, and he has as many seconds as the film has minutes. So, Mr. Matthew, how long was the film?
It was 1 hour and 39 minutes.
So you have 1 minute, 39 seconds to give us the synopsis. Are you ready?
Yes, I am.
Then let's have the jingle. And if you're still ready, go.
Jack Burton is playing with Wang. And Wang loses money to him. He says he'll pay up, but he has an errand to run first in picking up Wang's missus from the airport. Whilst there, she gets kidnapped and Jack and Wang meet up with Gracie. They pursue Wang's missus and find themselves in Chinatown, in the mother of all battles with rival gangs, and three magicians thrown in for good measure. And as they're escaping, Jack thinks he's run down Lo Pan, who's our big bad. Jack's truck is stolen, they come up with a way to rescue Wang's missus. They infiltrate a brothel where she's being kept, but the three lightning magicians get to her first. Not to be deterred, they find out where she must have been taken and once again infiltrate. Jack and Wang are captured, as the rest of the group are a little bit later. Jack and Wang escape and set to free the others. As this is going on, Lo Pan reveals his plan and is trying to become human again, and that's why he needs Wang's missus. Jack and co rescue everybody, but Gracie, who Jack wants sexy time with, is caught by a monster. They regroup and head into the set from Labyrinth to find the girls. This time there is a bigger gang of them, and to say they have a weird and wonderful fight is definitely an understatement. They sort of manage to stop the ceremony, but not before Lo Pan becomes human, thus allowing him to be killed, which Jack does in a spectacular fashion. They escape and all is well in the world, and Jack leaves without having sexy time with Gracie, and we end the film with him driving into the sunset, unaware that a monster from earlier is in the back of his truck.
Okay.
I mean, to try and sum that film up.
Yeah, I mean, I thought, never going to do it. But, nice. So, just remind us, how long was the film?
It was 1:39.
You did it in, drum roll, 1:31.05 seconds. 8 seconds under. Very nice, Mr. Matthew. And I shall drink.
I'll join you.
Okay. Well, there we go. It's time for a deeper look at this fucking bizarre movie.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few alternate castings.
Mm-hmm.
Jackie Chan was John Carpenter's first choice to play Wang.
Is that the studio weren't sure about him?
No, they were not sure at all. I think it was his ability to speak English whatever else. So, I mean, what has Jackie Chan ever done, eh?
Exactly. What happened to him?
And Kurt Russell was apparently John Carpenter. I mean, we haven't done a Carpenter film in a long time.
Especially not one with Kurt Russell.
No, exactly. A lead role, but he wanted Kurt Russell. Mm-hmm. But the studio were like, what about Jack Nicholson or Clint Eastwood? But no. And something that I've found out here in researching in IMDb is Kurt Russell turning down the lead role of Connor McLeod to do this film.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
In Highlander, if you don't know who Connor McLeod is.
Yeah. And didn't John Carpenter turned down directing Top Gun.
Oh, no. Did he?
I think so.
Oh, he fucked up then. Right. Okay. Jeff Bridges apparently was considered for Jack Burton, and Ellen Barkin was considered for Gracie Law, which, may I say, is very on the nose. Mm. The name Gracie Law, when yeah. she's a detective or something like that. What's Detective Gracie. What should we call? What's her last yeah. name? I don't know. Law? Yeah, that'll do.
That'll fucking do, innit?
Yeah. It'll be like, I don't know, a Brad Justice or something like that.
Connor Copper.
Yes.
Okay. Is that it?
Yeah, yep. yeah, that's the alternate casting.
Right. In that case, then, by all accounts, originally conceived and written as a Western, set in the 19th century in LA, I think it was, or somewhere mm-hmm. that sort of way. And the studio went along with it. But two new writers, weren't they? New to the scene, as it were. Gary Goldman and David Weinstein. But a lot of hassle went on, by all accounts, with the studio taking it, asking for rewrites and blah, 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 blah. And
I mean, that seemed to happen a lot in the 80s, didn't it?
Of course,
and I think yeah. do you know, and I'm guessing sometimes really positive came from that, but a lot of, you know, negatives must have come from that.
Yeah. I mean, studios are always going to ask for rewrites, aren't they? If to try and make it better, improve it, whatever, change it
I
to...
I guess so, yeah. If I'm honest, though, mate, I think it's got less prevalent nowadays because I think a lot of creatives are going, yeah, I'll sign on for no studio interference, yeah, please.
We do it my way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's all money men then, wasn't it? But yeah, so the script was rewritten, or it was they asked for rewrites and blah, 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 and then they asked to update it because it still wasn't what the studio wanted. And Goldman and Weinstein basically said, no, this is the film. Either you take it or you don't. So they were sidelined, weren't they? And a guy called W.D. Richter was brought in to rewrite it and update it and actually make it contemporary to the 1980s.
But saying that, you're talking about it being a Western.
Yeah.
I was just trying to visualize it. You could see it as a Western. Yeah. You know,
well, when you read
the original
notes,
he's riding in on his horse and cart or something like
and
that.
And it's the horse that ends up getting stolen rather than the wagon.
Yeah, yeah. You can absolutely see that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But, maybe it was the whole thing with the Golden Child, the studio. Oh, you know, they've got the Golden Child, that's it.
I suppose we need one.
It's always the way, isn't it? But yes, so Richter was brought in to rewrite and update it.
Rectum?
Mr. Richter.
Oh, Richter, sorry. I misheard you.
Mr. Rectum was brought in to rewrite it. And basically, Weinstein and Goldman would take, their names were taken off the film completely. And then a big hoo-ha happened and it went to the Writers Guild of America, who actually backed Goldman and Weinstein. So they are credited as the writers, and Richter is credited as adapted by or something like that. In the film. So it didn't have a happy gestation period.
I'm surprised it turned out so well then, Darren.
Yes. And also, when the film was made and finished and released, the studio, I don't think, knew what to do with it. And I can sort of see why.
What do you do with a film like that?
Well, they didn't publicise it at all, did it? Did they? And on a budget of somewhere between 19 and 25 million, its box office return in the USA was only 11 million. It lost $8 million. Yeah, I mean, it's nearly half of its budget it lost. But that's what Carpenter was saying, that the studio allocated a budget for publicity to each new film that was being released. And it was something stupid, like only $3 million. But for this, they just didn't know what to do with it and sort of just didn't publicize it properly.
Which, even in the 80s, was not a lot.
No, exactly. You've got to get your film out there, haven't you, to get bums on seats. And they didn't. And I think the film... Well, Kurt Russell says in an interview with Graham Norton that he thinks the film was only on general release for 3 or 4 days or something before that they withdrew it. So yeah, that explains a lot. But the studio didn't like it. I mean, you've got to advertise your film. But I think when you look at the year that it came out and the time it came out, it was up against a lot. I mean, Golden Child came out 5 months later. Same, similar sort of thing, but it's up against Top Gun.
John Carpenter.
That was 82. The Golden Child, Top Gun, Crocodile Dundee, Karate Kid 2, like you said, all these massive, massive films coming out.
Yeah.
The same year. They're all vying for position, and unfortunately, this film pretty much sounds like it was thrown under the wheels of the bus.
I guess as well, you call a film Big Trouble in Little China, you're like, what the fuck does that mean then?
It's a bizarre title, isn't it? It's almost too much.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I remember watching it in the 90s, so we can never cover it. Showdown in Little Tokyo with Brandon Lee and Dolph Lundgren. I love that film, by the way. But yeah, it's kind of like, okay, what the hell is The Big Trouble in Little China? What's Little China? Where's what? And it doesn't accurately represent the film.
No, it's almost too joking. I mean, the film is full of supposed comedy moments.
Oh, I did laugh out loud by myself a few times. Right. Yes. Number one being when Kurt Russell shoots in the air and then gets knocked out. Yeah. I'm sorry, I actually fell about laughing at that.
There's a lot of screwball stuff in it. I'm just not sure that Kurt Russell is the screwball actor. Don't get me wrong, I love Kurt Russell, as we've discussed in other episodes. But I'm just not sure that this does him any favours.
Right,
and I think that's probably down to the script more than anything, because he comes across as a bit, well, dumb, really. You know, he sold us the lead.
And he's not.
He's definitely not the lead.
He runs in next to Wang and does a couple of... But as I just said, he was knocked out for the majority of the final fight. So he'll shoot a gun every now and again, a gun that's got unlimited bullets.
It seems to have,
But I suppose part of that with being unlimited bullets is that it can be broken apart by a man into powder.
Bang.
That's it. It's gone. Yeah.
Oh, the magic man.
And his boots. Oh, my God, his boots, right? Jack Burton's boots to get replicas are about $300-$400.
What?
Yeah, I know.
Fucking hell.
Just put on some brown boots.
Exactly,
Yeah, you're right. He's sort of the... He's our way in, isn't he?
Yeah. But he's definitely not the lead for me. I mean, he's great. He's always great. He's always dependable. He's always reliable. But he's the sidekick in this.
Yeah, and there's a lot of characters, so it does feel a bit overstuffed at points.
Mm-hmm. Which we'll maybe get to later.
I mean, some of the stuff I've written down was, it was that underground sequence they went in where this mythical creature came out and ate somebody.
And then disappeared.
Yep.
Never mentioned again.
I love that they end up in Labyrinth's Bog of Eternal Stench.
It's very, very, very akin to Labyrinth, isn't it?
There's a lot of Jim... Well, it looks like a lot of Jim Henson stuff. It's not Jim Henson, is it?
Yeah, exactly. It's a poor imitation.
The flying testicle.
Yeah, with eyes all over it. Yeah, or warts or whatever.
It was...
The warty bollock.
If someone went, should we do this one? Yeah, fuck it, why not? Yeah. It's strange enough as it is.
See, that effect worked quite well. A lot of the other effects I thought were fucking dreadful.
Also, for me, I was like, the whole wedding sequence when they got people in and, the whole making him human sequence.
Nice escalator, by the way.
Yeah, fucking escalator. Not just that, he's coming down the escalator but all these skulls and whatever else, and they've got neon accents. And you're like, so hang on, you got some guy down... to install neon...
Around the eyes of the dragon.
Yeah, into your death chamber or whatever it is. You've got somebody down here kind of going, I don't know where the junction box is, but if you wouldn't mind connecting, can we have green neon around the skull or something?
We're looking over there. Have you wired it in? Yeah. Let's plug it in and try it.
Yeah, but now the escalators aren't working. Dave. Oh, for fuck's sake.
Oh, God, come on. Check the fuse box.
I tell you what, if the escalators don't work, let's put in a backup lift.
Yes.
That comes into the room.
Have we got that mystic lift we can put in? Yeah. Get out of the van.
Yeah. I mean, who builds these layers?
Well, obviously, very, very clever workmen.
The same people that did the bat cave, yeah?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I mean, I've put as well. A bit strange. It is a bit strange.
Mm.
Some of the fight stuff is good.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's a bit on the nose to have essentially the jets and the sharks with the, I tell you what, we'll wear yellow, you wear red, and then we fight.
Yes. It's just the fact that it sort of comes out of nowhere as well.
Mm.
I mean, you've got them driving down. So they drive the truck as they're trying to get Miao Yin back.
Or Wang's missus, called her throughout my entire synopsis.
Not quite Mrs. Wang, back. And then all of a sudden it stops. Okay, and then the funeral procession comes around. And And then there's another tong behind them that turn up and they start shooting the shit out of them, blah, 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 blah. I'm sure a lot of them die at least three or four fucking times.
I think they... Weren't they doing hand-to-hand combat, and then it's only when something else happened they pulled out guns?
Yeah, and then they're jumping all over the shop. And then it goes all weird.
And mystical.
And three oriental versions of the idiots from Superman 2 turn up. What the fuck? Is that...
But also, when designing a practical fight outfit, he has to put a basket on there. I mean, it literally was a giant wicker hat. I was like, you can't see out of that.
They're fucking huge. Yeah, bizarre. And then it just sort of gets weirder from there.
When you think it can't get weirder, it just does. And I was getting a bit lost around the middle. This is where I was like, oh, shit, I'm going to hate this. Is when the human form, I suppose, if you like.
The guy in the wheelchair?
Yeah.
It's called Lampo, not Lampo.
What's he called? Lopan.
Lopan.
And he's like, yeah, I've been around for a couple of thousand years, you know, and I need to...
Yeah.
I've got the spirit form as well.
Yeah. Okay, great. Who are you? Oh, you're him. Okay. Oh, fine. Right. Mm-hmm. But all the stuff we're going to the brothel. Did you not think she looked like Eileen?
No.
Picture of her, it made me laugh so much.
Yeah.
It's Chinese Eileen.
It was kind of weird though. So they'd go to a place, they'd infiltrate it and then retreat. Go to a place, infiltrate it, then retreat. Yeah. Go to a place, infiltrate it, finish.
But also, without being funny, Kurt Russell's character is just a fucking truck driver. And it turns out he has this this game of cards or dominoes, whatever it is, and the bet and things. At the start of the movie, and then it just, I wasn't sure whether we were supposed to trust Wang or not, because it doesn't look trustworthy, the whole double or quits or double, whatever they called it.
I also thought the sword slicing, knife slicing the bottle was going to come back as a motif later on.
Which I guess it does, because he talks about his reactions.
Yeah, no, but I mean, I thought that Wang was going to have to slice something later on, and we kind of go, ooh, can he do it?
Because he didn't do it earlier.
Fast reflexes.
That's the one, reflexes, not reactions. Yeah, but same thing.
How can you forget the word reflex?
Oh!
So, yeah, it's
just a bizarre film for me. It does get along. It does... I don't know. I just don't know what to say about it. It's...
What I love, just every time someone threw, like, a explosive, essentially... You'd see them throw the explosive, and then you'd hear the bang, but you'd see the smoke. Not the actual bang. Mm-hmm. You'd see the smoke and people just diving out of shot.
There was a lot of jumping around. They obviously had a nice little trampette.
Oh, well, don't get me started on the jumping. Okay, so when Wang is fighting, I don't know, what's he called? Lightning, thunder, I don't know.
Whichever one it is, yeah.
But they just... If people are fighting, stand opposite each other and fight. But they were just, they were taking run-ups and then flying through the air and smacking each other with swords. And then, I thought, this is, okay, I see why they're doing this. But it went on and on and on to the point where I just started laughing. And I was like, this is so camp. And
I guess if you're going to do that now, you'd use wires. You'd have wire work. But that was all literally jumping up and woo.
Yeah.
And bump, woo.
And with some dodgy backgrounds as well.
It was almost like something out of a circus.
That being said, though, it brought a big, big smile to my face. It really did. It brought a really, really big smile to my face.
For the right reasons?
Yeah, well, it was kind of like, it was that sequence. I kind of went, do you know what? This is bonkers, but I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah.
I'm really enjoying it for what it is. And it is bizarre and out there, but it's so different to anything we've talked about. I've really enjoyed that.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, then let's get to highs and lows then, I suppose.
Okay.
My first high, as it were, is that I think the production designer, John Lloyd, what he's done with his limited budget on these sets in this film, I think superb. Yes, it is a bit labyrinth, almost a cut price Jim Henson feel, without sounding horrible. But
I get what you're saying.
It looks really good. The sets are really impressive. And there's a lot of them.
Some might argue too many.
Well, yes. But, out in the streets, we've just discussed the fights and things. But then when we get down into the labyrinth, there's so many different rooms and sets and things used there. And this. Yes, okay, maybe they don't always work so well with the creatures and
exactly.
the effects.
Did they need a creature to come in?
Totally agree. But I think the sets, just taken as the sets, I think they look great. They're well lit. They're well used. And there's loads of them for such a limited budget, really. So therefore, that was my first highlight. Okay. I really liked what he did with them.
I guess it's not my first one of them. I like what they did with the action. There was a lot of you know, as you say, a lot of the same guys fighting back and forth. Our friend appeared.
Of course, and died. Fought and died many, many times.
He fought and died many times. many, but yeah, he was in such films as Die Hard. And
What else have we seen?
Lethal Weapon. He was the torturer in Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, yeah.
So the action was really well put together on this. And I think it needed to be, because if you're getting that many people together to fight, the choreography, although we're joking about the jumping and the fighting and stuff like that.
Sort of joking.
There's some good stuff that happened within it. And then there was some other crazy stuff when, you know, someone decided they were so pissed off that they'd explode. You know, they would hold their breath or whatever else, or inhale so much they would explode.
But that look is so iconic from other things.
Garbage Pail Kids.
The Garbage Pail Kids. Yeah. That's exactly what I was going to say. That before the guy explodes, it's an image you see quite a lot in if you watch. Of compilations of the 80s highlight things,
some of the
videos.
Horror films, even to a degree, Indiana Jones and
Scanners and
Raiders of the Lost Ark, though, at the end.
But that specifically from this film, you see quite a bit in lots of different compilation videos.
We do.
Shit from the 80s, man. Yeah, okay, but then my second highlight just ties in with that, bizarrely. I thought that the fight scenes were mightily impressive. There's plenty of them, and there's a nice amount of extras that it's edited really well. It zips along. It's full of energy. It doesn't dip. And apart from just using the trumpet a lot, they're actually quite impressive.
Okay,
so that's my second highlight.
My second highlight, three words. It's fucking crazy. So potentially or not, I think the zaniness of this film, the pure what the fuck am I watchingness of this film, actually made me really enjoy it.
Right.
So, I think at one point, and bear in mind, I'm sober when I watch this. One of my notes was,
really?
Fuck, I love this film.
Right, okay.
So I started to fall in love with the craziness of it. So, yeah, it's out there. It's like no other 80s film you will watch.
Apart from maybe Flash Gordon.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of another film that was anything similar to this. And that's...
Yeah, we haven't covered anything like that.
No. As I said, the only one that gets slightly close to it, it's Flash Gordon for me.
But it makes Flash Gordon look like Hamlet.
Harsh but fair, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Okay, lowlights then. My first lowlight is that I just wasn't sure what it was wanted to be. It starts off, actually, the start reminded me a little bit of Over the Top.
Yeah.
Or almost Roadhouse-ish. That sort of film. And apparently that was inserted at the insistence of the studio, because they didn't like his character, didn't understand his character. So maybe that's why it starts off in a certain way and then fucking changes. But it was unclear. I wasn't sure the motivations of some of the characters. I didn't trust a lot of them when we started. You know, after the Domino's game and the whole double or quits and the money thing and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Wang doesn't sound like you're supposed to trust him.
Wang is untrustworthy at the beginning, but then by the end, he's our hero.
Exactly. So that, for me, was really clear. Another point that you touched on earlier, there are so many characters introduced in quick succession, some of them just disappear again.
The reporter wasn't necessary.
Exactly.
You know, and also the maitre d' wasn't necessary.
Exactly.
I just wasn't sure
who was who and what was going on.
And also Gracie just walking into the house.
Exactly.
I was like, what the fuck are you doing walking in?
But all that stuff in the airport as well is like, is she a baddie? Is she a goodie? Yeah, for me, I think it was quite confusing and a bit fuddled.
Okay.
So that's my first lowlight.
Well, I guess I'll use this lowlight to back you up and just say, yeah, it gets a bit caught up in itself and it needs to be clearer.
Mm.
So I wanted to know more about the mythology behind this. So we get a couple of monologues or a couple of speeches about, so a couple of thousand years ago, this guy was banished for doing this or made to
something
not be a skinwalker.
He's got to do this.
Now he's got to get somebody with green. I'm like, in 2,000 years, hang on, you've not found a girl with green eyes.
Yeah, exactly. And then he finds two all at once. They're like buses.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'll just marry them both. Yeah. Got to be sure.
Yeah.
Oh, they held the flaming swords. I mean, how many women, yeah, they were. But how many women over the years have grabbed his flaming sword and just...
well, quite.
So, yeah, I mean, the mythology behind it needed to be clearer.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's something there. And there's been talk for ages and ages about a remake with The Rock, actually.
Yeah.
And but if this can be distilled into something that is a bit more understandable, then I think it's got the potential of a good film.
There's so many elements just thrown into the pot, and it just...
Yeah.
It does. It's yeah. Okay. Which brings me to my second low light. And actually now, reading this again, it feels a little bit harsh. The problem with it for me, mainly, is that I found it quite boring.
Oh, right, okay.
We've talked before about, you know, the state of mind that you're in when you watch a film or anything like
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
yeah. And I was very aware that I was under a bit of a pressure, a time pressure thing. But I was up for watching it. I was enjoying it. But then it just... When it sort of took that turn,
Is it around the middle? Because I got a little bit bored in the middle.
I almost fell asleep in the middle. I just thought it was a bit... It was drivel.
Right, okay.
There's
a lot of exposition there, isn't there?
Yeah, but then it just became fight. It was so loud. I remember just thinking, fuck me, there's another fight going on. Jesus, that's really loud.
Well, turn it down.
Oh, another fight. Blah, 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 blah. Oh, another fight. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, another fight. Some of the physical effects were naff. It was overly weird. Some of the racial stereotypes really pissed me off as well. For a film that could have, you know, championed the fact that you have an Asian lead, basically, and a film that has, is it three Caucasians in it?
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the cast are Asian. They're still full of fucking stupid stereotypes and daft dialogue, and I don't know.
Something like at the beginning, cultural differences aside, I looked at you as a friend. I was like, you don't need to say that.
I thought it tried to be some sort of almost like an 80s cartoon,
right? Okay,
and it failed miserably. And that was my problem. I found it quite boring, I think.
Well, my second low light is much more mundane, and hearing about the budget as well, it makes sense. My second low light essentially was some of the effects have aged really, 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 really poorly.
Yeah,
and it's some of that. I don't know what the actual technique is called, but you can tell it's animation over. Certainly the lightning stuff and...
Yeah, rotoscoping or something like that.
Rotoscoping sounds like it. Yeah, that was what the word that was in my head. So, right. Potentially.
Yeah.
Some of it's aged particularly well.
Mm-hmm.
And just a lot of physical sets. Yeah. You know, it's questionable why they needed a monster. And a monster, though, that's obviously got opposable thumbs because he can put Gracie... In handcuffs.
Exactly. By just standing in front of her.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see her in handcuffs, though.
Well, I mean, I think I've got a film somewhere.
Porky's.
Porky's.
Hey. Oh, oh, oh. Yes.
So there we are. Highlights and lowlights.
Okay. A quick nod to the music. It
started so well, though, Darren. I heard it and I was like, oh my God, this is the 80s personified.
It's also John Carpenter personified, isn't it? It's such a...
Yeah, yeah.
It's sort of rock and roll, a bit of funky, it's synthy, it's manic, it just, and then it just sort of relaxes down into a typical John Carpenter score. It's got elements of Halloween. It's got elements of
Assault of the Same Composer. 13.
He pretty much always composes his own score for his own film.
Right, okay.
And that's what he's done.
See, I don't tend to look at the music because I like you to talk about it and I like
there's
to react
to it. There's not much to... He has that sort of same sort of... Either there's a heartbeat or this sort of driving rhythm to it.
Hmm.
And it's there in this again as well. Yes, there's some nice East Asian touches to it. And there's a great bit of 80s / East Asian / 70s synth. Muck up,
but there's a song, isn't there?
Yeah, the song. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. The song.
Yeah, yeah. The Big Trouble in Little China song.
Elements of all of those things, but on the whole, it's just another typical. I mean, there's a lot of music. It's there constantly. It's pretty much underpinning everything.
But the song at the end, then, is not in any of the charts that you're going to do.
I wouldn't have thought so.
I must say, you get a movie song and it hits, then it's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Or you can even sing it.
Yeah. This isn't one of them. So I've not really got much more to say about that either.
I must say, I watched it even this afternoon. If someone said to me, I will give you £1 million right now.
Sing it.
If you can sing The Big Trouble in Little China. Nope. Thing.
Nope.
Keep the million then.
Yeah, that's me not buying my house. Yeah, so there we go. That's it's sort of on a par with everything else about the film for me.
Okay. Well, how about we take a break? Because I desperately need a piss.
Me too.
And right, we'll come back and quiz each other on this.
Oh, naughty but nice.
And we're back. Part three of Darren and Matt's 80s adventure, where we are looking at A Big Trouble in a Little China.
Oh, yes, we are. And at this point in the podcast, we're going to have a quiz.
Eyes down for a full house.
Now, we are 3 episodes deep so far of this block of 10.
Yes, we are.
Anyone that knows our podcast, you'll know that we have a quiz every week. And as it stands at the moment, it's 2-1 to me. It was a bit of a battle last week, wasn't it?
It was a bit of a battle.
Yeah.
From what I vaguely remember.
So, yes, it'd be in an even numbered episode. I get to ask the first question.
Yep.
I'm not holding out much hope this week, to be honest. But yes, I will start then. So question number one for you.
Uh-huh.
How long ago did the Emperor curse Lo Pan?
2,258 years ago.
Is that your final answer?
Yes.
Correct.
Oh.
Nice. Is that one of yours?
It was one of mine, yeah. It's not even on the screen, by the way, but yeah. It was one of mine, but
okay.
Yeah. Well then.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So, okay. So during the fight between the yellow scarfs and the red scarfs. I can't remember what they're called.
Right.
What are they called? No. there is prominently a brand of cigarettes billboard in the background. What brand of cigarettes, or brand of smokes, as I put this afternoon, I don't know why, but what brand of cigarettes are advertised?
Oh, I didn't notice that at all. I'm going to have to go with... Camel. No idea.
Camel.
Was it?
It really is, yeah.
Woohoo!
I thought he's going to go Marlboro. He's going to go Marlboro.
Wowzers. Okay.
Cunt.
No, Camel. what's the name of the gang that kidnapped Mao Ying?
Oh, it's not one of my questions at all. It's the Matt should have paid more attention to the gang. I can't remember.
Okay, it's the Lords of Death.
Are they the same guys that fought the babysitter on the subway in Adventures of Babysitting?
Well, maybe.
Don't fuck with the Lords of Death or something, and don't fuck with the babysitter.
Don't fuck with a Chuck.
What? All right, then. In a similar vein, then, about what happened in the past, when was the world turned upside down with huge earthquakes?
Oh,
because, you know, that's why they're in that whole bog of eternal stench place. When was the world turned upside down?
I honestly have absolutely no recollection. So I'll say 3,000 years ago.
1,000 years ago.
Oh, okay. Okay, so after 2 questions each, it's 2 points each. Going back to the emperor that cursed Lo Pan, what was his name?
The emperor. No idea. Absolutely zero clue.
Ching Tai.
And we might be able to come up for a tie at the moment if you get this wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
You'll get that.
I wouldn't bet on it.
How much money does Jack have after the night of gambling?
Well, at what point? As in, at the...
When he finishes and says, blah, 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 before double or quits or whatever else.
Oh, fuck. It's something like... Oh, come on, brain. It's something like $1,148. I don't know. I can't remember.
What's your final answer?
1,000. Well, that's the only answer I've got. $1,148.
Do you want to go higher or lower?
Nope.
It's exactly that.
Was it that?
Yeah.
Fuck me, that's a good guess.
Oh, fuck.
That means you win, yes.
I really was not expecting that. Oh, shit, okay.
All right. Jesus. Wow. Okay.
I really didn't expect that.
Yeah, I know. You literally flipped your way into that one.
Okay. Well, we had two other questions. Three other questions. And one of them I fucking said before. What's Lopan's first name?
David.
David. What's the name of Wang Chi's restaurant?
The Black Dragon.
Dragon of the Black Pool.
Right.
And what's on the front of Jack's truck?
Oh, hauling ass.
Hauling ass. Yeah. Yeah. That was it.
So my other questions were, speaking of his truck, what's it called?
The Pork Chop Express.
Yep. What's Egg's bus tour name?
Oh, Egg for Young Tours or something?
Yes. Which insurance company is Jack with?
Oh, I can't remember. Explosion Insurance. I can't remember.
Mutual Fidelity Insurance, okay. Based in Sacramento. How much?
$3,000 a year or
something?
$6,000, okay.
What's his alias when he goes into the brothel?
Something like Harvey Newman or
fuck, all these questions I could have got you with. Henry Swanson. Yeah. And what's the trading company they actually go into when they first get trapped?
I can't remember, so I'm not going to...
Wing Kong.
I was going to say Wong Kong, but...
Yeah, no, close, Wing Kong, yeah.
Yeah.
There we are.
Okay, well, there we go. That's,
damn it!
I'm so surprised at that. I really am. But I guess then that's...
Like... It's just the way the cards fall, isn't it?
It's the way the cookie crumbies. Last orders at the bar.
Last orders at the bar, please. Last orders at the bar.
Well, there we go. That's our look at this fucking bizarre film.
Mm.
Big Trouble in Little China. So now we're going to sum up, give it a score. And I'm going to go first because it's an even-numbered episode. I don't know. It's I'm really struggling with this because some bits I absolutely loved. The cast I thought were fantastic. I really did. Dennis Dunn.
I mean, there were some dodgy acting moments there, weren't there?
One thing I was going to say, a lot of them were from Kim Cattrall.
Yes, they were.
I thought she was so over the top.
Don't think she knew what she was in at certain points.
You could almost smell the fucking gammon. It was so hammy. But it sort of fits with the film. And she's fit. But
I'm guessing, though, as a performer, you know, she's kind of going, what am I making here? Maybe it has to be this very over-the-top 1940s serial thing.
I just think some of the delivery of some of the lines was
terrible. I agree. And I'm a fan of her. I think we both are, actually. Yeah, yeah, she's done some really good stuff, but this wasn't one of them. Yeah.
No, absolutely. So, and the whole being bored of the film or bored by some parts of the film, not really understanding what was going on at times, a lot of flim-flam, over-the-top stuff, just a bit weird. And I like John Carpenter films. I really do. I think I was quite complimentary about The Thing because I remember loving the film. I love Halloween. I like vampires. I just don't know what this film wanted to be. I think that's my major problem. I didn't know who I was supposed to trust, who I was supposed to like. And then all of a sudden, you sort of do know who you're supposed to trust. I don't know. For me, it's a bit of a confused mess. And sort of having a bit of a battle with myself. Mm-hmm. Would I go back and watch this again? Or would I rather go back and watch Mannequin again? See, that's a benchmark.
Ooh,
I mean,
okay.
I mean, out of the two, I'd rather watch this than fucking Bachelor Party. But and that's where I'm struggling. Maybe in a different day, in a different frame of mind.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. So I guess I'm going to have to, you know, err on the side of caution and just say my score for it, I'm going to have to be the same. I'm going to give it a 3.
Okay.
Yourself?
Surprisingly, I mean, obviously, sometimes I'm a bit more generous to films than you are. I'm surprising myself with this score.
Oh, okay.
Because I was like you halfway through. I'm going, what the fuck am I watching?
Mm.
But then I kind of took it for what it is. You know, if you watch Adam West and Burt Ward do Batman in the 60s, you know, and it's campy, it's fun, and And that's why I started to take from this. As soon as I started to take this, maybe it wasn't the original intention, but that's why I started to take from this film and just started to grin a lot. A lot of the stuff was happening. I laughed out loud three or four times in this film. That's rare.
Yeah, because you're such a miserable bastard.
No, but when you're by yourself, you don't tend to laugh out loud, do you?
Exactly. There's something about the other people.
It's like a human validation thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? I'm sure Freud would have a lot to say about it.
So, yeah, I laughed three or four times. So I really enjoyed it. And I thought to myself, will I watch this again? I was like, actually, yes, and probably quite soon.
Okay.
Because I enjoyed it for what it is. And I think it is, it's almost got that... not quite. It's got that B movie feel to it now.
It's definitely got a bit. One of the notes I had, it's definitely got a B movie feel to it.
But I think that wasn't the intention. No. But that's exactly how it's turned out. So yeah, I had fun with it, and yeah, it's nice. It's just good fun. So I didn't think I was going to give it a high score, but I think I'm going to have to go probably as far as a 6.
Okay, that's fair enough. I see that.
Because I really enjoyed it. I will definitely go back and watch it again. And I know what to expect now. Because the last time I watched it, I was probably about 9.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So, 6 and 9.
Yeah. 6 and 9. Nice.
So that's a total score of 9 out of 20.
9 points,
so, yeah. It's not bad.
But we have to say it's got a massive cult following, isn't it?
And I can see why.
It's really found an audience since the studio went to
I'd love to have watched it with you, though.
Right. Well... Yeah.
And that's something we're looking
at. There are plans afoot. But we'll save that. We'll save that.
But I think that's something that's kind of fun as well. I'd love to have watched it with somebody as well. Because sometimes you kind of go, am I crazy? Or is this kind of funny?
Yeah.
You know, or is this just, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah, for me, it was, what the fuck? But anyway, yeah, that's our look at Big Trouble in Little China. Do you agree with us? Are we talking absolute shite? Are you on Matt's side? Are you on my side? Have you never seen it?
Yeah. Also, which image are we going to use for the actual podcast? Is it going to be the actual poster or is it going to be Darren's poster where he's got his head plastered on Kurt Russell's body?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, I forgot. Shh. Ex-nay on the copyright infringement A.
Okay.
Yeah. Check out my website to find... Yeah, anyway. Yes. Well, there we go. 9 out of 20. For Big Trouble in Little China. What do you think of the film? Do you love the film? Just get in touch anyway. It's always good to hear from you. And it's great. We're getting so much feedback now from people like Jarek and Linda. It's brilliant. I'm loving it.
We're having a great time. What about next week, though? Would you like to hear the tagline for next week's film?
Well, I guess so. Yeah.
All right, then.
Yeah.
Again, we go back to 1986.
Again?
Yeah.
But for our final... season finale.
Well, yeah, it's our season finale, trust me, we've got some great stuff coming up there, folks. So the tagline for next week's film is: "He survived the most hostile and primitive land known to man. Now all he's got to do is make it through a week in New York." We are going back to Secret of My Success.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah,
interesting.
I'm looking forward to this one, then.
Well, I mean, we could do that, but sounds like shit.
Does it? I got the joke.
Thank fuck for that. Well, there we go.
Well, listen, I guess that's pretty much it. That wraps up this week, which was Big Trouble in Little China.
Mm-hmm.
As Darren says, get in touch. We always love hearing from you. So apart from that, Daz, anything else?
No.
Well, until next time then, I've been Matt.
And I am Darren.
Cheersy!
You know when you get post-credit scenes for TV shows and you're like, oh, do you want this week?
Yeah. Because we just tear through it, didn't we, for James?
We're going to tear through you.
Spec.
What? Huh?